Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics Podcast, where we explore politics, economics, history, culture, anything to do with our main focus on politics and government here in the Midwest Heartland. This show is distributed and sponsored by WVIK, the flagship national public radio station in the Quad City region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and today I'm really pleased to have on a very gifted political analyst who I've been following for years. His name's Miles Coleman, and he is a writer and editor for the University of Virginia Center for Politics. It's a great site, folks. Go to centerforpolitics.org. That's all one word, and it's free. You can get some of the best political analysis in the country. Miles works on the Crystal Ball, where they provide lots of information and analysis and even predictions, and we're going to talk a little bit about that today. Miles, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I can't believe we're finally here, but the election is going to be tomorrow. And what are you looking at as far as I guess the key question will be who's going to win the battle for the Electoral College? What's the latest information you have telling you?
Yeah, sure. So today we actually just put out our final predictions for the Electoral College. Add everything up, and we're projecting Biden comes out with about 321 electoral votes, to Trump, who gets about 217. Interestingly enough, not to take attention away from the Heartland, definitely that kind of Midwest, Rust Belt, that's kind of the quintessential region that we think of sort of as the purple, as really the kind of nation's purple area. But for us, what may have been a little new for this cycle is some of our most kind of agonizing calls in the Electoral College were in the Southeast. They were in states like Florida, Georgia, North Carolina. We did something a bit maybe unconventional this year, in that we picked Biden in North Carolina and Georgia. Those are states where Democrats, Obama won North Carolina very closely in 08. The Democrats have been trying to make serious plays at both states. But Florida, on the other hand, is just a state where we've just gotten burned. we try to take in all kinds of considerations when we make our ratings, I know polls, the history of the state, but ever since 2014, we have picked the wrong winner in Florida, and it's always been, always been us picking the Democrats, and the Republicans end up on top. So this time we just went ahead and said, okay, you got to know, we just really can't trust Florida. You know, even though Biden is up there in the polls, usually by a few points, what we've learned is just the four Republicans, they run a very well-oiled machine there. So even if Biden is up a bit in Florida, I wouldn't be surprised if Trump ends up carrying. So, and then we have, of course, it was very, one of the narratives we got out of the 2016 cycle was, basically, Trump won because he broke through the blue wall.
Right.
And that was kind of which honestly, from my perspective, I really always had sort of an issue with that term because, if you think about what those states were, states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, at the time Trump won those states in 2016, most of them had Republican governors. So it's not like, yeah, they had been voting Democratic since 1992, but it's not like they were impossible for Republicans to win. That said, we have Biden favored in all three of those states. It looks like most polls have Biden up in Michigan and Wisconsin by 7-8 points, give or take. Pennsylvania may be a bit closer, maybe closer to 5 or 6 points in favor of Biden, but it's just really compared to 2016, Biden has a very has a much bigger lead than Hillary had, so we're expecting him to fare a bit better.
So I know you've probably heard this before, but I'm going to say it because there's a lot of people listening in probably thinking the same thing. That's what we thought 4 years ago. All the polls showed Hillary Clinton winning this election, and the polls were wrong. Can the polls be wrong this time? Have the polls I've read some of the coverage of pollsters changing some of their methodologies and to make sure they're not right again or that they're not wrong again. Do you feel satisfied? Obviously, do you? But why do you have more confidence in the polls this time than what they how they performed 4 years ago?
Yeah, so kind of sort of like I said in that last response, compared to the types of leads that Hillary had, Biden's leads are much more stable. What I mean by that is we ran a piece at the Crystal Ball probably in May or June, and it still basically held up that if you looked at Hillary's leads, over the months, one month she would be up by two, the next month she'd be up by five, then she'd be back down to like, up by like a point. So basically her lead would bounce around a lot. Pretty much since May or June, we've seen Biden up consistently 8 or 9 points. He's been very close or oftentimes over 50% of the vote in national polls. Of course, as we know, after 2016, the national vote isn't everything. But if Biden is winning by 8, 9, 10 points in the national vote, it's very hard not to see a lot of those states, a lot of those more purple states kind of coming along. So that's partially what goes into our thinking here. Sort of a big story out of the 2016 election in terms of polling is, okay, well, a lot of pollsters didn't really weigh by education. And what we've seen in the Trump era, especially, when you think about the gains that the Democrats have made, the Democrats have done very well, in the more suburban types of areas, whereas Trump, when he won, he really did well in the rural areas. So basically, what we've seen in the Trump era, especially, among white voters specifically. White voters with a college degree are much more likely to vote Democratic than those without them. So that's really, in terms of being a predictor for voting preference, education is up there with now race and gender. Mm-hmm. So a lot of pollsters weren't really accounting for that. So that's something that a lot of pollsters sort of reflected on after 2016. What may throw things off this year is I was looking, there were a few polls over this weekend that were kind of, interestingly, in Iowa. We got a poll this weekend from the Des Moines Register, which raised a few eyebrows, to say the least. And Selzer, who was their goal, who among political junkies, we kind of recognize her as Iowa's kind of gold standard pollster. She had the Republicans up by quite a bit. I'm not saying that she's wrong. But Ann Selzer is someone who I'm told doesn't wait for education. You know, I respect the fact that I work. That's not necessarily a criticism of her. It's just what I was told. But anyway, what I'm going to be looking for this year is I'm curious because a lot of pollsters, how they wait for this because this year, what's kind of a quirk of 2020. Is we have this huge volume of early mail-in votes. And one of my friends is a Democratic pollster, and she tells me, okay, well, how pollsters weigh people who have already voted. That's what keeps me up at night now. Because if I'm a, if I've already voted and I pick up my phone and they ask me to take a poll, do I give them a response? Because, you know, I've already voted. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing that in a number of polls. Not really, you know, maybe, you know, it may account for maybe 4 or 5% of the respondents. But that's something I'm looking for going forward, in terms of the polls. And just one last thing I'll say as well is I think that in terms of looking at polls, one of the most useful tools I've seen is if you go on to the website of the Upshot, which is run by Nate Cohn at the New York Times. They have a feature where for a lot of the swing states, they'll give you whatever the polling average is, and they'll say, okay, well, if polls were as wrong as they were in 2016, this is what the election would look like. Or if polls were as wrong as they were in 2012, this is what the election would look like. So I think one thing that kind of gets swept under the rug is there was a decent polling error in 2012 as well. It just was, a lot of it was in Obama's favor, so no one really noticed. In a lot of the Rust Belt states in particular, mm-hmm. Obama ended up beating a lot of his poll numbers, but no one really noticed it because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the thing that, that the election hinged on. So I think really the polling industry is always something that's constantly, that's really constantly having to try to reinvent itself. There have been, for instance, a number of pollsters who are trying to work more internet polling into some of their rare results. I'm not sure it's completely there yet, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's, I saw those Iowa results come out from the Des Moines Register Saturday night on Twitter, and of course Democrats were apoplectic. It was immediate. And, of course, a couple other polls have come out since then, with Biden ahead and with the Senate candidate Greenfield ahead. But how do your models look, Miles, for, Iowa? How do you see Iowa going this election?
I was actually just tweeting about that after this. About 2 weeks ago, we moved Iowa. It was one of the few toss-ups we had. And we're looking at it, and it's like, okay, well, Greenfield's been up in most polls. One of the websites we check pretty often as political analysts is called Real Clear Politics. And in the Real Clear Politics average, over the last, you know, 8 or 9 polls at that time, Greenfield had an average lead of about 5. And this was closer to when after Justice Ginsburg died, so you had a lot of money going to these Democratic candidates. So it looked like, okay, well, Greenfield's up about 5 overall. And going down this last home stretch, she's probably going to outspend Ernst by some estimates I saw said something like 5-1. So I'm like, okay, that's going to be hard for Ernst to overcome. So about 2 weeks ago, we moved the race from toss-up to lean Democratic, and literally the next day, we get, I think there was a poll from the Upshot, which had Biden up by a few points in the state, but it had Ernst up 1, which was interesting, which kind of went against our narrative. And we've had a few other polls like that since then, which have been, which have shown a better situation for Ernst. So basically what we did is, today, when we at the crystal ball, we're a little different in that some handicappers will just, at the end, if they have a number of races as toss-ups, they'll just leave them as toss-ups. Well, we think, okay, well, who are we? You know, we want to pick a candidate in every race, because that way we really, in order to take our side, we really have to do a lot of research into that race. So when we eliminated all of our toss-ups today, we ended up going with Ernst and Iowa. We made her a slight favorite and moved the race to Lean's Rath Republican. So it's not, I know there was a PPP poll out earlier today, or it was either earlier today or last night. It had Greenfield upper tied by a few points. So are we completely writing off Greenfield? No. I can definitely see a situation where if Biden's win is big enough, which it could be, we have Trump favored in Iowa as well. But if Biden's win is big enough at the top of the ticket, I could see that sort of being a boost, to some of these down ballot dead Democrats as well, like Teresa Greenfield. So, we are going with Trump and Ernst in Iowa. But interestingly, that's not to say that there's not going to be any good news for the Democrats in Iowa. We have them, if you look at the state's congressional delegation, I know in 2018 they picked up two seats there. So of the state's four member congressional delegation, the only seat that the Republicans hold right now is Steve King's. We have after he lost his primary, we still consider Randy Feenstra a favorite. But for those other three seats, we're still sticking with the Democrats. So that may be some good news for them in Iowa.
So on the other side of the river, in Illinois, we've got a U.S. Senate race, and then we've got 17th Congressional District with Congresswoman Bustos. How do you see those lining up? There hasn't been much talk about either one up to this point.
Yeah, for Durbin, we've always seen that race as safe Democratic, even though I think when he was last up in 2014, that was the closest race of his career. Mm-hmm. And I think he still ended up winning by something like at least 10 or something like that. So it's at the statewide level, Illinois is a very blue state. But in terms of that 17th congressional district, where you have Sherry Bustos, we have her seat as likely Democratic, and we think that even though it's a district that Trump, very narrowly won in 2016, it has shown quite a bit of propensity to split its ticket. Just for example, even though Trump carried the district in 2016, it also very narrowly voted for Tammy Duckworth as well. And I know in her congressional race, Bustos is definitely one who has tended to overperform. I know that the Republicans have tried to spend a bit against her, but that may be more due to the fact that she is, she's in charge of what they call the Democratic, Congressional Campaign Committee, which is kind of the organization that heads up national Democratic efforts in the House. So if they can, even though it's a pretty safe seat by her standards, if they could give her a bit more of a race, I'm sure that they would, like that, but I think she's pretty much favored.
So how, in the all-important battles for control of the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House, currently the Democrats control the House, the Republicans control the Senate. How do you see those going?
Yeah, sure. So in our final projection today, since I was just talking about the 17th district, I think I'll start with the House, is that really, even before this election really started breaking in Biden's favor, we always saw the Democrats keeping the House. It was just going to be, it was always going to be an uphill climb because you have a lot of freshman members in that, freshman Democrats from that 2018 class who have done very well with raising money, establishing themselves in their districts, maybe a good example in Illinois, it's more in the Chicago area, but someone like Sean Kasten, he won a very close race in 2018. This would be for the 6th congressional district, and just about a month ago, we moved his race to safe. So we see him as a clear favorite. And so it's those type of freshmen like him, that really have helped pad the Democrats' majority. Overall, we have the Democrats picking up about 10 seats in the House. So that would give them a majority in about the, of course, in the House, a majority is going to be, overall, it's going to be 218 seats. Well, we can see that Democrats ending up with maybe a bit more of 240 seats. So that's sort of what our projection is for the House. For the Senate, it looks like earlier on this year, we identified what we called the core four seats for the Democrats. These are seats that they would pretty much have to pick up in order to take the Senate. As it is, the Republicans have a 53-47 majority in the Senate. So basically, if you're the Democrats going into the election with 47 seats, maybe a bit of bad news to start off with is they're probably going to lose Doug Jones in Alabama. It's just he's a good candidate, but Alabama is such a red state that Doug Jones could very well run double digits ahead of Trump and still lose. Or ahead of Biden and still lose. So the Democrats are really effectively going into the Senate with 46 seats after they lose Jones. But the good news is for them is I really don't see a scenario where the Senate flips but Trump is reelected. So in other words, if the Democrats are in a position to take the Senate, it's very likely that if they end up, if the Senate with 100 members, if it ends up a 50-50 tie after this election, it's very likely that the Democrats are going to have, Kamala Harris there to break that tie in their favor and give them control. So assuming they get Harris, the Democrats are going to need four seats that they're going to need to pick up in the Senate. This is what we call their, core four. And those states are Arizona, Colorado, Maine, and North Carolina. In the 2018 elections, the Democrats picked up two seats out west, which could very well be the case again. In Arizona, you have Republican Senator Martha McSally, who was appointed to fill out the rest of John McCain's term. This seat is actually a special election. So she is, unfortunately for her, she's going up against one of the Democrats' probably best recruits of this cycle in Captain Mark Kelly. He is the husband of former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, who was, they've since been very big advocates for gun safety. He's every quarter, he's outraged her by a lot, and I can't remember the last poll I've seen where McSally was ahead. So, it looks like in Arizona, even though it's going to be a probably very close state at the presidential level, I would expect Kelly to pick up that seat through the Democrats. In Colorado, you have another Republican incumbent. You have Senator Cory Gardner, he won his seat in a red year. He's a good candidate. His opponent is John Hickenlooper, who was the former governor there. He briefly ran for president, but didn't get too far. So he ended up kind of dropping down to the Senate contest. Hickenlooper isn't a darling of the left. I think we can say that. But he knows, the last time Hickenlooper was on the ballot in Colorado was back in 2014 when he was reelected as governor. And Hickenlooper, was the only Democrat elected in Colorado that year. So he knows how to, though, win these tough races. So think that Hickenlooper...
So you're seeing the Democrats carrying those core four to get to 50. Mm-hmm. Yes. Is there anything beyond that in your predictions so far?
Yeah, so that's what we have. So okay. Basically our final projection is we expect the Democrats to get to 50 seats. One kind of interesting state is Georgia. It actually has both of its Senate seats up this cycle, and Georgia has this weird dynamic where we expect both of those seats to go to runoffs. That's just kind of the quirk of their elections. So it's going to be, we're giving the Democrats 50 seats, we have the Republicans at 48, and we have both of those Georgia seats as toss-ups because they're probably going to go to a runoff. So in terms of potentially other opportunities, we have a few states as leans Republican, like Lindsey Graham, South Carolina. There are states like there's an open seat in Kansas. Some Democrats are very bullish about Alaska, where they're running an independent. So if sort of like in Iowa, if Biden and the Democrats have a big night, I could see them maybe picking off one or two of those seats that we have as leading Republican.
That's a great segue into my final question here with Miles Coleman, who's a writer and editor for The Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Take our listeners inside your war room at home or the office or wherever you're going to be tomorrow night. You'll be settling in, watching the returns. Are there some key races, counties, states, whatever, that early on will give you an idea what night, kind of night it's going to be, that it's going to be a big night for Donald Trump and the Republicans, big night for Joe Biden and the Democrats. Mm-hmm. What will you be looking for, again, early to kind of give you some early indication?
Yeah, it's probably the state I'm going to be watching most is North Carolina.
Okay.
It is a state where I was told a lot of states are very new to the whole idea of vote by mail or absentee voting. In North Carolina, they've been doing it for several cycles now, so they're able to be much quicker. So basically what I was told is 80% of North Carolina's votes will be counted by 7:30 Eastern time. So that should give us a very good idea of where the state stands. So we have it going to Joe Biden. So if Biden is up in North Carolina, that would be a very good sign for him. It's not a state that he necessarily needs to win. It would probably be more like icing on the cake for him. Mm-hmm. So if Biden is up in North Carolina, or even down by maybe 2 points, that may bode very well for him. If Trump is up by maybe 4 or 5 points, then we could have a long election. And why North Carolina may be very decisive as well is it is also one of those core four seats for us in the Senate. So if the Democrat, Cal Cunningham is up there, it's going to be very hard for Republicans to hold the Senate. So that's a state I'm going to be watching very much as well. One of the other kind of states is Arizona. I would watch, even though it's going to be not as immediate, I would watch Maricopa County in Arizona because that's where Phoenix is. That's where something like 60% of the state's population is. And Maricopa County was the largest county in 2016 by population that voted for Trump. So if Biden can split Maricopa County, the Democrats in 2018 saw some very good trends there. If he wins Maricopa County, he probably wins Arizona. So that could be another thing that would bode well for Biden. I would say another state that counts ballots quickly is Florida. They're used to, for all the stuff it does wrong, Florida is, they've had a heavily voting mail, they've had a heavy mail-in vote, presence, for a few cycles now. And it's a state where if Trump is losing Florida, then he really doesn't have any path at all.
That's all right. Well, I guess I lied. I got to ask one more question then. In Iowa, Illinois, you know, is more likely to go Democratic. We know that. But is there a county or two in Iowa that you're going to be watching?
I would definitely watch the, it's a county that, is it Winnipeg? I think it's kind of up in the north.
One of the Norwegian,
part.
Norwegian counties.
Yes, that is where, I say that because it's a county, someone who I've talked online to a bit is the state auditor there, named Rob Sand. That's where he's from. Mm-hmm. And when he won, he did very well there. He did, even though it went very narrowly for Trump in 2016, he got something like over 60% of the vote there. So if Biden can even come closer or win it, that may bode well for him in Iowa.
Okay. Well, there you go, folks. You got a first-hand view, of inside view of one of the top experts in the country on politics. It looks like from what Miles Coleman has been our guest from the Center for Politics at University of Virginia. He's a writer and editor for the Crystal Ball there, which, again, is free. Go to the Center for Politics, all one word, .org. And sign up, and you get emails just like I do. And this organization has some bright minds, and they're picking Joe Biden to win the presidency, and the Democrats to get 50 seats, control of the U.S. Senate, and pick up 10 seats and control the House. So there you got it. We'll see how it turns out. And Miles, thank you very much. I know you're really busy, but thank you very much for taking the time to be with us and sharing all these insights.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me.